We're at Tanglewood this morning, and just a few miles away through the Berkshire beauty of Lenox lives another cultural gem, Shakespeare and Company. We're going to talk about one of their current productions right now. It's called Cymbeline. It's a rarely performed story of intrigue and deception in the face of steely resolve with wild plot twists, mistaken identities, and a heart-rending quest for love.
I was going to say that.
Now you can say that.
We're joined by Tamara Hickey, who plays Imogen in Cymbeline. Ellen Burroughs, artistic director at Shakespeare and Company, and Tina Packer, my sparring partner, founding artistic director of Shakespeare and Company and director of Cymbeline. The production also marks a personal milestone for Packer, who, after opening her production of the play, will have directed all 37 plays in the Shakespeare canon.
Yay!
That is the coolest thing in the world. Well, first of all, welcome all. Thank you all for being here. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Mm-hmm. That's an accomplishment. You have to just be on cloud nine.
I am. I mean, I feel slightly as if I'm cheating because a couple of them have not been fully mounted, you know, public productions. They've been workshop productions. They've been kind of things that I've thought, no, I'm not going to show that to
the
public.
Don't tell anybody that. Just go with it. You directed them all, for God's sake.
I have directed them all, and I don't think anybody... No, some other men have directed them all, but I don't think any other women have ever directed
them
all.
I'm sure not. I have read Cymbeline.
Yes.
I have never seen it performed.
Yes.
And to my knowledge, it is rarely performed.
That's right.
Why is that?
I think because it has a seemingly complicated story, and there are about six or seven strands going through. The language is very simple, but also he does a line of tragedy, a line of comedy, a line of tragedy, a line of comedy, and you don't know what it is. You think, is he kidding? Or is he not kidding? And actually, he's doing both. He's at the height of his powers. And he's actually seeing, can I write tragedy and comedy right alongside each other? And by God, once you start rehearsing it and getting into it, you find, yes, he can, and he does. But when you read it on the page, I think most people are kind of appalled. Also, Joe, there are so many of the other plays in it. So you think, oh, we're doing Romeo and Juliet. It's about banished lovers.
Right.
You know. And then suddenly it's turned into Rosalind on her journey to the Forest of Arden, except it's Imogen on her journey to Milford Haven. And then you're into Othello territory with the husband so jealous of his wife because he thinks she's been unfaithful with a man called Iachimo as opposed to Iago. And he's going to kill her. And sends instructions for... So you've got all these other plays interwoven in.
So this is later in his career?
It's actually the fourth from the end or the fifth from the end, depending how you count, Alan.
A Shakespeare expert recently told me that there's a big theory that he had syphilis.
It could be true because, first of all, a hell of a lot of people had syphilis. I mean, an enormous amount. They didn't have a cure for it then. But the second thing is that he went back to Stratford and it seems that he was sick. And many people, because it kind of comes up in the plays as well, but it could be just that he's talking about his friends. Who knows? But maybe he had syphilis. I don't know. I think they should dig up his bones and find out.
But he didn't want you to, right? I mean, he left in instructions not to dig them up.
That's right. Mm. That's right. So
he didn't want the DNA being used.
He did not want the DNA.
There was no
he didn't want people all these years later talking about his syphilis, for God's sake.
Well, he didn't. No, he didn't.
So
especially on radio programs called WAMC.
So let me ask, why is it just by the luck of the draw that this came to be the last production of the last play that you had to direct to complete your journey, or was it that a more conscious choice?
Well, it was the luck of the draw called Alan Burroughs that he decided he made. I mean, it's quite a risky choice because people don't do it much. You think, will it do enough box office to keep us alive all summer? You know, what's going to happen? So it is quite a risky choice, but Alan is full of risks, and in my book, he really, you know, he said, go to it, teen, and off I went.
So what got you? What got you to that point?
I had produced it before. I'd produced it in Boston, and with Actor Shakespeare Project. So I knew that it was compelling. In terms of it being derivative, I think, you know, people shy away from Shakespeare for this being derivative in Cymbeline, right? So they think, well, why do a play that he's deriving plots from himself when we can just do one of the greatest hits? But in fact, if you look deeper, like Tina is saying, if you look deeper into this play, by referring to himself, he's actually asking us to dive deeper into all the stories at once, right? Because he's kind of clicking them off as you go down the exploration of the psyche, the exploration of relationships, the exploration of what is power exactly.
And politics.
And betrayal. So in a way, yeah, it is self-referential without being self-reverential. And I just think it's a really strong story. I mean, you know, with characters like Imogen particularly, who is, you know, an accumulation, yes, of different characters, but also like Iachimo, who is, you know, is a killer role. And they're all in there. It's a clear story the way Tina has assembled it as well. So I think people are really going to enjoy it.
Tell us about playing Imogen.
I mean, she's very pure on so many levels, yet has this sense of resolve and commitment about her that I find to be quite worldly. I do think there's a level of innocence that maybe, you know, maybe her purity and morality can be seen as a certain level of innocence, but the play really takes her on a journey that brings her to a sense of maturity that is very evolved and wise.
As an actress, can you relate to her as a person, you personally?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to be able to think that I have elements of her which have to do with commitment, and I may be chucked down to the ground, but I'm going to get back up again. And I think that that's a big part of who she is this constantly taking a fall and then finding more commitment through the pain that she suffers, particularly at the hands of her father and Posthumus, to just really go after what's true and real. She's not interested in the status. She's not interested in the power. She's not interested in the royal bloodline and carrying that through. She's interested in love and truth and honesty. And
that's you.
That is, well, I hope that there's aspects of me in there. I'm trying to tap into it.
Am I wrong about this? Is this my fifth grade education? Or were the women in the Shakespeare plays were played by men, right?
Yes.
Okay. So does that, he knew that when he was writing it. So does that change the perspective, the female perspective, from what he was thinking he was going to be hearing to when he heard the Tinas and everybody else who were playing in these roles?
Well, I think his imagination really embodied women. So I don't think that was a shortcoming for him. And when you're writing, although it might affect you who is the actor going to play this role, I think his own imagination about what he wanted to say, she is the moral center of the play. The play in a way comes right because she adheres to love all the time. And so we are able to get back to this place where people care for each other and look after each other, not I'm the hot shot. I'm going to, you know, bash everybody else. So she is the moral center. And I think Shakespeare, actually wanted his young actors to come up to the Imogens and the Rosalinds and the Juliets. And I think they probably did, because if you put a demand on an artist, even a young artist, and you write for them, they'll start coming up to what you've written.
And you think the people in the audience, Tina, could appreciate the fact, could start to see them as women as opposed to men?
I do. But I also think it probably had another level that, my God, men could actually be like women, and maybe the world wouldn't be such a rotten place if men were more like women.
He was an early feminist.
He was a very early feminist, and he really knew that women were the people who brought the thing back to sanity again. And we've never needed women more than we need them right now.
Absolutely.
You know what you should do,
yes,
Tina? You should write a book about this very subject called call it Women of Will, following the feminine in Shakespeare's plays, and look at this in a deep, scholarly manner. That's what you should do.
I should, although right now, I think maybe I've done that, Joe, but now I'm writing about the eroticism in Shakespeare, so all the sexual stuff in Shakespeare I'm writing
about.
Well,
I can't wait to do that interview with you.
Well, give us, just for the hell of it, give us one good example.
Give us one good example
of the eroticism.
Well, I don't know whether this is, but in for instance, Coriolanus, the play I just finished doing in Philadelphia.
Now, don't get a license lifted here.
Oh, yeah. All right. But I was going to say, what you see is all the eroticism goes into the relationship between the male warriors, because that's where their ecstasy lies, and they convert that into sex. And then the women, his mother is wielding power. As a man, his wife has no power whatsoever, because she has no place for her sexuality. So, you know, where women put their sexuality and their sexual energy is very important in the Shakespeare plays. And Imogen in Cymbeline absolutely puts her sexuality into the man that she loves, and that she is going to stay true to that and make sure that it comes back to center again, and it does.
With that in mind, I am interested, Tamara, in what kind of conversations and discussions you as actress, Tina as director, have when it comes to not just that, but in the character and in the play as a whole?
In terms of building the character or working on the character?
Tina has this knowledge and all of this.
Don't remind me.
I know.
I'm always trying to, you know, there's always one eye in my head looking to Tina, hoping that it's pleasing her and that I'm doing it right.
You deeply please me.
But I do think that there's a...
Here's a hint. If you don't, I think you'll know it.
I'll know it if I'm not pleasing her. I do think that there's part of the way that Tina sets up her room. I feel just as though as Shakespeare, within his writing, gives internal direction to actors. You know, if you just keep coming back to the text, you get so many clues as to how this needs to be served. Tina, sort of in a similar fashion, sets up a room in a way that allows us. And perhaps it's about permission to really go to deep places. And you know that that's the expectation. And so as long as I feel like I keep going down and diving deeply, yes. There's a certain part of the dialogue that I think happens in the silence between, you know. And so Tina, for me, serves as a reminder of when I maybe need to open moments up more, go a little deeper. With Imogen, I mean, like any role, but I just kept trying to come back to the honesty and the purity. So I think she helps remind me of moments that where I can, you know, stay on that task of truth and depth.
Alan, what is it like to be the one person who can tell Tina what to do?
Well,
there's a big assumption there.
We've been in conversation for many years, yeah. Tina and I, ever since 1988. So I'm more interested in collective thought and finding out what we can each learn from meeting in the middle on things. So I don't like to hand decisions down very well. I will say about Shakespeare, just to pick up on that previous point, I think it's really interesting. He's perceived as having been a quiet, retiring man, but, you know, he never really intended for any of his plays to be published. He expected them to escape into the ether. He had two stage managers who picked up his script, and for that we are very grateful. But you really have to look, in terms of the silences, like Tam mentioned, at what isn't said in these plays, and what isn't said in particular by the mothers. Tina mentioned Coriolanus. Volumnia is a very powerful woman who has a very strong influence on one of the most powerful men in the world at the time, right, according to the play. So, but the women, and particularly the mothers, the silence that is evoked by them is deafening. And I find it's true, particularly in The Tempest, which is coming up, and it's particularly true in Cymbeline as well. What isn't said by the mothers, and that's we need to explore.
Now, Cymbeline runs through August 6th at Shakespeare and Company. In the minute that we have left, tell us what else is happening. We're gonna you'll be back with us to tell us the other thing. But just a quick little bullet point of what else you've got going
on. Well, coming up is a beautiful play called Intimate Apparel by two-time Pulitzer Prize winner Lynn Nottage. And then after that, we're opening our brand new Roman Garden Theater outside with The Tempest. And then we return to our Wharton comedies with Roman Fever and a brand new one by Dennis Krasnick called The Fullness of Life. Also in August, we're doing a special series of storytellers and songwriters, which is senior company members performing one-person shows in addition to Women of Will, where we fold in and explore a symbiotic relationship between music, such extraordinary musicians as Michi Wianco from Silk Road, Chris Delmhorst, an extraordinary folk singer, Bobby Sweet, local favorite. And these shows will be for one night only, and people can take advantage of that marriage of text and music. Midsummer Night's Dream at the Mount, and then God of Carnage will wrap up our season.
You did that with 2 seconds to spare. Congratulations. Cymbeline runs at Shakespeare and Company's Tina Packer Playhouse through the 6th of August. To learn more, visit the best URL in all the world, shakespeare.org. Shakespeare.org. My love and thanks to all of you.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Appreciate it. To learn more, again, shakespeare.org. You're listening to the Roundtable's live broadcast from Tanglewood on WAMC.